Welcome one and all to episode 98 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host after a couple-week hiatus, Justin Higdon. Justin, how's it going, man?
It's going good, man. I think it's been longer than a couple weeks. I feel like it's been like a month and a half since you and I have done a show together. You did that great show with Deontay Lee. Mostly talking about Lamar Jackson. That was great. I've been on vacation. I've been on parent mode. But this week, as I told Seth before we got on the air, I actually have a few takes. So I'm looking forward to get back in the swing. We're really hitting the home stretch of college football season, and that means take season. And so things are really heating up.
It is, and things are getting – interesting. The debates are raging, and we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about Carson Wentz and maybe the front runner for the NFL MVP award in his second year out of the mighty North Dakota State University.
This is a painful subject for me.
And we're going to talk about evals and maybe the danger of your takes and your evals and then trying to either or trying to die on the hill that is your take. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Saquon Barkley and the race for the number one pick. Right now your Brownies look like they're on pace to again have the first pick in the NFL draft.
Everything's going exactly as planned. I mean, it's a double tank, tank 2016, tank 2017. They call it the process in the NBA. It got Sam Hinkle fired in Philadelphia, but they ended up coming out kind of in a good shape after his ouster. So we'll see if the Cleveland front office and Cleveland coaching staff survives this one, but so far, the Hugh Jackson era is at 1-22 and heading to London this weekend with a ridiculous quarterback carousel, but I digress.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about the top of the 2018 NFL draft and just how the name talent really is missing this year. Last year, we all knew Myles Garrett. It was Myles Garrett. I mean, there were no questions that it was Myles Garrett.
Except for me. Until the combine.
Right. But
I wised up.
You know, and in 2016, we had Bosa and Elliott. And, you know, obviously Wentz came in hot. We had name talent. This year in the NFL draft, the name talent is at positions that don't normally get drafted very high. So it's going to be interesting to kind of follow along with this. Albert Breer had an interesting article that we're going to talk about. So it's going to be an interesting show. It's going to be a good show. We appreciate you listening and getting back with us as always. So let's get right into it. And let's talk about evals.
And let's talk about Wentz, baby. Let's talk about
that's right. I
mean, come on. This is what and there were a couple of different things that came out of the Wentz performance Monday night, because it started out with another turnover, and the skeptics remain every time this guy seems to turn it over once a game, right? But then he turns in a virtuoso performance for the rest of the game, including some ridiculous plays, some big-time throws. I don't know what the official PFF number on big-time throws was from him, but the guy was making plays. It was ridiculous. I was hanging my head, shaking it, all those things. And the question here becomes, is this a misevaluation? Is this a case of a guy landing in the perfect situation? Is it improvement? Is it a combination of everything? We saw Dan Hatman, who runs the scouting academy, and he basically
and is a former scout. Whether
right, and he came with a take that, you know, he does his take was, I don't care what your pre-draft analysis was or what your pre-draft evaluation was on Wentz. What have you taken away from it, I think was the premise of his article. And then we saw Kian Fahey come in hot because he wasn't a Wentz guy, and he basically said, screw that. Keep doing the evaluations that get people to follow you. And
well, not only
it's got to be somewhere in between that, right?
Well, not only that, and you know, we've had a, or I've had a, you came in and calmed the situation down, but I've had a slight run in dust up with Hatman before because, you know, he's tweeted out similar things in the past, and my response is always, why your scouting sucks. And he took it as I was going after his scouting when all our listeners know that it was just, you know, in reference to our summer series where we have guests on, we always start with our terrible work and go into our guests' terrible work. And that's what it is. Like, it's okay to admit, like, hey, I got this wrong. Like, and the reason I think it's important to admit it and especially when you're in a position of, believe me, I'm very intelligent. Listen to what I have to say. Is because it shows your process. And so if you're opening up the process of how you got to identify that Carson Wentz was not good, and you go through that and say, this is what I saw. This is what my worries were. This is how I'm, you know, advancing these things moving forward. It gives some sort of cachet to your readers, to your listeners, to your followers, whatever, because it allows them to see your process. It makes everything, you know, you're able to kind of pull back the curtain and see behind the way that things are done. When you just blatantly go, my process works, it doesn't matter, and then say, I'm not going to change. Well, that's how you end up, you know, winning 13 games a year on average for the first 3 years as the Arizona Cardinals head coach, and then end up with Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert as your quarterbacks at 3-4 in the 2017 NFL season. Like, this idea of we don't change, we don't adapt, we don't get better, that's how people die. And so, yeah, you can start off hot in the industry. You can start off having great takes, being popular, and having a ton of followers, and then you're going to get exposed because everybody gets exposed. That's the reality of the situation. It's adapt or die, and it's not just that way in society, but it's that way in the NFL and in evaluations. And so what Hatman's saying is, don't lament being wrong. Tell me how you're taking it in stride and getting better. And that's the other thing. And it's important, you know, a lot of people goof on the Scouting Academy and the whole thing, but what they do explain to you is that you're going to make mistakes within this industry, especially if you get into the professional level. You better be able to explain your misses and mistakes and learn from them, because I can promise you this, if you are the Los Angeles Rams, for instance, actually, let's just go with your Cleveland Browns. If you are the Cleveland Browns,
this hurts, man.
And you say Carson Wentz is not a top 20 quarterback in the NFL.
Oh my God. Come on, stop.
And then the very next year go, all right, we can get Myles Garrett and we could get this Patrick Mahomes kid who every time you see an interview with any Chiefs player or coach raves about him, or this unknown guy from a real small school that didn't get a lot of, you know, screen time in this Deshaun Watson guy. And you know, obviously,
yeah, complete mystery, yeah, man.
Obviously the Texans took a lot of heat for taking this small school unknown guy in Watson, never on the big stage, never performed on the highest level. And all he's done is leading the NFL in touchdown passes after only starting
until Wentz overtook it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, on Monday.
And so that's the whole thing, is it's like, all right, who's doing these evals, and why have we missed on two guys that look like franchise quarterbacks. Now, this isn't a victory lap either. You don't go, oh, well, I had Wentz and Watson won, so let me take a victory lap. Like, we're still, you know, 22 games into
the self-pat on the back there by Seth.
but you know, we're still only 22 games into Wentz. We're, you know, 6 games into Watson. Right. Like, things are going to change. The NFL is going to adapt.
Both these guys will have bad games again. We've seen that even great quarterbacks like Drew Brees have bad games later on in their careers after setting records. So, I mean, it's not like everything's set in stone here. But, you know, to your point, I mean, you brought up two guys, Wentz, Watson, and this I do not mean this as excuse making whatsoever, because for one thing, you have to look at where these guys go in terms of situation. And Wentz came to a team in Philadelphia that was 7-9 before his arrival, and they traded up for him because they felt like the missing piece to their puzzle was a young up and coming quarterback. They had just undergone a coaching change too, and they felt like they had a foundation around a team that was going to foster development with a young quarterback. With Houston and Deshaun Watson, again, they traded up to number 12. That was a team that was 9-7 with Brock Osweiler and then Tom Savage. Okay, so these are not bottom of the barrel, complete rebuilding job teams. So let's take yours and my evaluations of Wentz and Watson out of the picture and try and understand what Cleveland did. And it would be very difficult for a first-year front office, first-year head coach in Hugh Jackson. I mean, first year with Cleveland. He had obviously had 1 year in Oakland prior to that. But it would be very difficult if their first pick on this team that had gone 3-13 and then had just purged itself of all the veterans was this older prospect coming from an FCS school who had had a year and a half as a starting quarterback at the college level. That would have been a very difficult sell for their fans at the time. Now, the Watson thing I think is a little bit different. You and I, we were both very high on Deshaun Watson. They had a chance to get Myles Garrett and then get Deshaun Watson at 12, and they still took that chance and traded back. I was excited about Kizer at 52. I thought they had their cake and were going to eat it too. And now we see that there's still so much work to be done in that situation. So you have to ask, like, are these misses, are these misavows? A lot of people were really down on Deshaun Watson. I think that it's important to note what Houston's done so far to make him successful. I think it's important to note that he's thrown up some 50-50 balls that have been kind of lucky and have resulted in big plays and scores. He scored a couple garbage time touchdowns in a blowout game. So it's not to downplay this. It's not to discredit these guys for what they've done. In fact, I think Wentz has made huge, huge strides from last year. I think last year when people were hyping him, I thought it was undeserved. This year, this guy's playing – he's on fire. I tweeted it the other night. It's like watching NBA Jam, the football version. Carson Wentz is on fire. He made a touchdown pass to Corey Clement, an undrafted rookie running back. That was just insane, the way he avoided pressure and got rid of the ball. But it doesn't mean that, I do think we've got to take into account improvement situation and things like this. So, you know, what am I going to take away from this as far as my – obviously, I liked Watson, so I think that that's going well for me. But what am I going to take away from Wentz, a guy that I was a little lower on than a lot of people, saying that he was a late day two guy? And – maybe it's to more closely examine the winning pedigree and some of the intangibles that guys bring. That's very tough for me to grasp as a person who's looking from the outside in, as far outside as we are, as just podcast guys, as bloggers who don't we don't get a chance to talk to these guys. Maybe a trip to the Senior Bowl would have helped sell me. I don't know. It's something I've got to take a look at as a person who's interested in evaluating and see why I didn't get this one even close, really. It doesn't look like I'm even close on Wentz. The rest of 2016 class, I didn't like that much, and I still think that outside of Dak Prescott, who's playing some really good football in Dallas, I still don't think I'm that wrong about that. But we'll see how it shakes out.
Well, and I think the other thing is this, and Blake Murphy has talked to us about it, and he writes about it, and you know, he talks about kind of the Parcells rules and are they dead? And I don't think they are dead, but I think they've been modified to how we see players used now. You're going to get a guy like Wentz who sat behind another long-term starter at North Dakota State and didn't push him as a freshman and sophomore. And then he gets in there as a junior and senior, and he's all of a sudden, you know, oh, he's a second round guy or a day two guy after his junior year. And then by the end of his senior year, it's like, he's an early day two, late day one. And then, you know, come April, it's Wentz is the number two pick. And so
I actually, to that point, I think Brock Jensen, the guy who preceded him at North Dakota State, has been quoted recently as saying, like, pretty much, I knew this guy was going to be as good as me and then that much better. So maybe if I would have – I wish I would have been able to hear that from Brock Jensen, or maybe it was obvious to me, like, from a physical stature standpoint, athleticism standpoint, that Wentz was better in those categories than Brock Jensen, but the way I saw that offense run, it wasn't obvious to me. So maybe it's a matter of, like, looking at the offense. One thing I did know about Wentz, he was extremely good, efficient on third downs and in the red zone as a senior at North Dakota State. And some of the other quarterbacks that I've liked down the years weren't. And so maybe that's something I need to look at more closely. Blake, as you mentioned, he does a lot of great work with stats, and he's really coming up with what I think is a pretty good system. So I've been picking his brain a lot, and I will continue to do so. Sometimes maybe it's just a case of quarterbacks just not somebody's bag, and that might be the case with me when it gets all shaken out.
Well, and that's what my last part was going to be is, I think, and Deontay and I talked about this, and we can go into this, you know, to kind of head into the next segment, but fit matters so much. And you talked about this a lot. Is Carson Wentz with Hugh Jackson the same guy? Probably not. We're probably seeing this year in year two of Wentz what we saw in year one of Wentz in Philadelphia. And so we're probably going, bust, right? Well, one, because it's Cleveland, but two, we're going to, he's a bust. And we talked about that. Like, if Lamar Jackson ends up in, we'll just say Arizona, I don't think that's a good fit. I don't think that's a good area for him to be in. Not because I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to be great, but because I don't know if Bruce Arians will adapt his style to fit the strength of what Lamar does. West Coast style, able to move a lot. He is able to take shots down the field, but he's not going to be a guy that you're going to want to consistently throw those 17-yard flood routes to. Like, this isn't a guy you're going to want to ask to put balls in between the sideline and the numbers every two to three throws. So no, I don't think he'd be a good fit in Arizona. But you know where he would be a great fit? In San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan, a guy that has changed his offense depending on who his quarterback is and has gotten the most out of a lot of quarterbacks. You look at the regression of the Atlanta offense after Shanahan left, and yes, he may have cost them a Super Bowl win, but he still was a key reason to why that offense was so good and so dynamic last year and put them up 28-3 as well, because he's very good at putting his team in a position to win games. And so I think Shanahan and Lamar Jackson would be a match made in heaven. I hope it doesn't happen, because I don't want the 49ers to be good on top of the Rams looking like they're good and the Seahawks still having Russell Wilson. So, let's hope that doesn't happen.
We're going to get back to Lamar in a few, because I think he's a candidate for, as an elite player in this class. I think he's a candidate. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. As Seth alluded to, we're going to talk about that Albert Breer article that kind of made some waves. But first, we're going to segue. We talked about Carson Wentz. He was number two pick overall. He was drafted behind Jared Goff, who I think the jury's still out on that guy. He was he started out very well, and he's now hit a kind of very mediocre streak right now. I'm surprised, as an aside, I'm a little surprised that LA Rams aren't taking crap for not taking Wentz over Goff when they made that trade. But anyways, let's talk about who is going to be number one this year, because as things stand right now, we're in a situation where the quarterback class was very hyped. We had Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Lamar Jackson. The quarterback class was very hyped, especially the first three guys that I mentioned. And none of the three is really standing out as what looks like a surefire number one overall draft pick. If I had to say between Darnold, Rosen, and Josh Allen, the guy who most looks the part would be Josh Rosen. But we've heard some character questions about him, and it's at this point it's very vague, so we're not going to go any farther than that. But to me, the clear-cut best player in college football, similar to how people were talking about Myles Garrett a year ago, is Penn State running back Saquon Barkley. And I just said running back. What if he's the best player in college football? He's the best prospect. He's a guy who's been compared to Marshall Faulk. Does that outweigh the fact that running back has a low positional value as far as the NFL is concerned? We've seen running backs go number four overall the last 2 years with Leonard Fournette, with Ezekiel Elliott, but it's been since, I think, 1995. We've got to go all the way back to Kijana Carter when he was picked number one overall, another Penn State running back, ironically. But Kijana Carter was the last running back that was taken number one overall. Is this the year that we see – we've already seen running back value creep back up into that top five because they recognize these guys, Zeke and Fournette, as elite talents. Is Barkley elite enough? Is he that far head and shoulders above the rest of this field that we can say, like, hey, if you can't decide between these quarterbacks, can we take this guy number one? Can the Cleveland Browns, as things stand, could they – I mean, what would happen if they took a running back number one?
Well, and that's the question, especially with the Joe Thomas injury. Not that there's necessarily a left tackle that you can advocate going first overall in this draft, but
I mean, we've seen a left tackle from the MAC go number one overall recently. So, I mean, that's another story, but.
So, yeah, I mean, Barkley, I think he is the best player in college football and is going to be the best draft eligible player. But it goes back to what we even talked about with Zeke, and you were a big Zeke fan. I'm a big Zeke fan. I still believe that that was the right pick for them. But when you look at it in the, kind of scope of everything, was the Zeke pick, necessarily in terms of drop off of talent, was it really worth it? When you can say, oh, they could have had, Jalen Ramsey and Derrick Henry. Now, I don't think.
Okay. I'm a Henry guy, but is there any evidence that Derrick Henry's as good of a player as Ezekiel Elliott at this point?
Right. And so that's the question, is if you're going to take Barkley one And you and I can agree that he's the best talent in this class. But is the distance between Barkley and running back 4 or 5 as big as the distance between Ramsey and cornerback 2 in that class? Because cornerback 1 was Ramsey. Cornerback 2 off the draft board was Eli Apple, who's been awful. Vernon Hargraves was 3. He's been awful. William Jackson III, I think, has turned it around a little bit for the Bengals.
And yeah, he was injured as a rookie, but he's playing well right now.
And then Artie Burns is kind of a high-variance player for the Steelers. So those were the corners taken, and then obviously Dallas took Jalen Smith. That's another, you know, conversation for another day. But, you know, so that's the question. And in the Zeke case,
the assumption is that Henry would have just stepped in just like Zeke did and rushed for 1,500, 1,600 yards right off the bat. You know,
well, and that was kind of my point. I think in Zeke's case, you can make that argument that he was worth it because, yes, Ramsey playing cornerback is, you know, maybe a top 5 corner in the NFL already at a more, you know, hard to come by position. But because we don't know what Derrick Henry is as a volume rusher yet, and not because of him, but just because of the system in Tennessee, they're, you know, if they get a quarterback, they're just a quarterback away from being really good, by the way. And I'm just kidding. But when you look at it overall, I don't know if it was, I wouldn't say it's the wrong pick.
Look, so, this is hindsight drafting 101 because Dallas made the Zeke pick with the idea that Tony Romo was their starting quarterback. So it's really easy to sit there and poo-poo them and criticize them. Say you could have had Jalen Ramsey. He was an extremely good player. We both liked him a lot. Everybody liked Jalen Ramsey, or at least almost everybody, I think, except Lewis Riddick, liked Jalen Ramsey. But the thing is, like, again, they had Tony Romo. They were thinking, we've got this great quarterback. We've got Dez Bryant. We've got a decent receiving core. Jason Witten, great offensive line. Ezekiel Elliott's the missing piece. He's the missing piece of the puzzle. He's the upgrade to what we need. Now, when Romo gets hurt and you've got to go with Dak Prescott, now it's all of a sudden it's very easy to play Monday morning quarterback with this pick.
And the other thing is this. The second best running back from that class has been Jordan Howard, and he went in the 5th round. So you can't – so the distance
– And there's a big difference between Jordan Howard last year and Jordan Howard this year, to be honest. Right.
Well, and the distance between – so Zeke and running back 2, I think, was similar to Ramsey. So now you're just talking about positional value, a lot of different things, and I agree.
And it has to vary from team to team, right?
Right. You went into the season thinking Zeke is going to take the pressure off of Tony Romo. And in hindsight, he took the pressure off of Dak Prescott and allowed Dak to, you know, progress at a really nice pace to the point where
he's playing at a Pro Bowl or All-Pro level maybe at this point. I mean, he's having a better season now than he was having last year. And, I mean, Dallas is still about 3-3. They're still a middle-of-the-road team. Last year they went 13-3. There are a ton of factors that go into that, but Dak is still playing well and above expectations for where he was drafted.
And so when you look at Saquon and you look at this year, that's the question you have to ask. Is Barkley the best talent in the class? Yes. But is the gap between Barkley and player, you know, running back 2, Darius Geis,
presumably.
Is it that great? And honestly, as good as Barkley is, I think Geis is close enough that you can make the argument that, all right, if I can get Geis at 15 and I can get my top quarterback, preferably, but you know, or whoever the presumed best talent is, then I think at more of a need position, I think you can make that argument. Now, if you're going to tell me you're going to take Mike McGlinchey or Connor Williams at number one,
no,
just take Barkley. Like then yeah. there's no reason to ruin the pick because McGlinchey or Williams are probably going to be there at 15, 16, whenever that pick falls from the Texans.
McGlinchey's a conversation for another day for me because I don't even think he's a first round pick, and Williams is hurt. So
exactly. So those are the supposed top two offensive tackles in the class. Quentin Nelson's the best offensive guard. Lineman in the class.
Guard.
So are you going to take a guard when you no. have huge investment? So again, now we're fleshing it out, and so then
especially if you're Cleveland, who just spent 50 some million dollars. Like $100 million on guards, Kevin Zeitler, right. Joel Bitonio last offseason. So if Cleveland's sitting at number one, they're sure as hell not taking Quentin Nelson at number one.
So now the question becomes who or at what position and who can fight for that first overall pick. And so if we take the idea of quarterback out of the entire
– Let's just pretend that no quarterback – these quarterbacks are a disaster – and let's say Sam Darnold goes back to school. Josh Rosen, Allen. Attitude Josh questions, Allen. Drive him back. Josh Allen's clearly played poorly, and people are just not sure about fit when it comes to Lamar Jackson. He looks like Michael Vick as a prospect, but not everybody's sold on that type of quarterback prospect.
And
Baker so let's take quarterback out.
Baker Mayfield's 5'9". So
Baker Mayfield, yeah.
So when you look at this, that means who are your other options? Well, usually it's a pass rusher then. So there, because we talked about, there's really no offensive tackle per se, left tackle. Let's
right.
Just
so honest. It's usually a defensive end or defensive lineman, right? That squeezes into that top overall pick.
So the first player that we can talk about is Bradley Chubb out of North Carolina State, who's had a really nice season. But that would be kind of unprecedented, wouldn't it? From a guy that hasn't put up huge numbers until his senior year.
Well, Chubb had big numbers last year too. At least as far as tackles for loss. So
yeah, he
is did Bradley Chubb kind of like an Emmanuel Ogba type of prospect?
Right, and he did have 10 sacks, so it's not like we're talking right. about a guy that didn't have. But
and he's got what 6.5 this year so yeah, far, so he's on a good track.
We're talking about a older in terms of he's a senior. Mm-hmm. What looks like kind of a pure 43 strong side defensive end edge rusher, like he doesn't. Look like Vic Beasley or rush the passer like Vic
or, I mean Von Miller or Von Miller. Miles Garrett.
Right. So is he a guy that you're saying, okay, I'm comfortable with him? And I would probably say no, that's not a guy you're going to want to spend the first overall pick on.
Let's be honest, Seth, if he was wouldn't he have come out last year as a junior? Isn't that how this usually works with both quarterbacks and elite defensive ends defensive linemen who create a lot of sacks, who cause a lot of pressure? I'm not saying that Bradley Chubb is a bad prospect. In fact,
not
I think
at
he's
all.
One of the better prospects in this draft class.
But when you're
talking about number one overall, he hasn't set himself
apart
up for that.
Right, and that's where, again, we come into the conversation, is the distance between Chubb and Harold Landry and, any other of the edge rushers that great. And I really don't think it is. I wouldn't think to myself, man, Bradley Chubb's the guy I have to get. Like, he's the guy that I got to take at number one.
Yeah, I think we're talking right now at this point about three edge rushers who have stood out in terms of high first round pick potential. And it's Landry, Harold Landry from Boston College, almost more on what he did last year, but he's got
Yeah,
the build more like a Vic Beasley, like you mentioned earlier. He's the smaller guy, the more of the outside linebacker type of build for a pass rusher. I think he's a little bigger than Beasley was. But then Chubb is the guy with the build similar to Emmanuel Ogba. And I don't necessarily think he's going to test as well as Ogba did. So what we see is Ogba was the first pick of the second round a couple of years ago. And he's actually playing pretty well, but as a run stopper, not creating a ton of pass rush
he's not a pass
opportunity.
rusher. What about
He's been making a lot of tackles for loss in the run game. And then the other guy, Farrell, is. What is he, a redshirt sophomore from Clemson? So he's kind of an up and comer. Redshirt sophomore like that will be a riser a lot of times. He's the guy who just had a 3.5 sack game the other day or something like that. So maybe Farrell is the guy who rises up and becomes that guy. But those are your three first round pass rushers that I think are making noise right now. And I don't think I've watched games of all three of those guys. I don't think any of those three are screaming to me, even top three pick, even top five pick.
What about Arden Key? Is he completely out of the conversation at this point?
I mean, he's not producing. He's not producing at all. He went from being a 240-pound guy to coming in reportedly close to 280 pounds. And you could see it from the pictures that he obviously gained weight, came in overweight, which is crazy to me because he had so much weight to gain to get there. And now not being productive. And he also has the questions of why did he leave the team? What's going on upstairs with this guy? And I don't presume to know what's going on, nor do I really want to judge him. It might be something that I can completely relate to, but I don't know. But I do know what I do know, and we've talked about this before, I think in our SEC preview, is that he's going to get judged on that by draft Knicks.
Yeah, fair or not. And he's going to get judged on that by teams. He's going to have to answer the question.
Now, a guy who had 12 and a half sacks last year in the SEC, that's good pedigree. But he's not following up very well. In fact, it's kind of a disaster to this point.
Then you get to the interior pass rushers. Usually it's edge, but every once in a blue moon, you'll find an interior pass rusher. The guy that's getting a lot of run right now is Maurice Hurst out of Michigan. He's got a lot of things going for him. He's not Aaron Donald by any means,
And
but
he would have to be considered number one overall. We can almost like end that conversation right there.
exactly, and he would have to be, but his production has been high. The problem again is he that much better than a Christian Wilkins out of Clemson? Is he that much better than a Derek Nandi out of Florida State? So those are the questions that come into play. And that's why, even though we're talking about a running back, we could really see a running back be the first pick in the draft.
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, I think it was actually 2014. It had been a long, I don't remember if it was 2014, 2013, but whatever happened, there had been a long time had passed since a running back did not go in the first round. It had been like 50 years. And then it actually happened. And then it happened a couple years in a row, but it did happen. So now it's kind of swung back the other way to the point where it's been 2 years since, or going on 23 since a running back did go number one overall. And I really think it could happen this year. I mean, Barkley's been so good. He's obviously a 230-pound guy who can run between a 4.3 and a 4.4. I think I'd be surprised if he clocks slower than what Ezekiel Elliott did, which was 4.47 at 225 pounds. I think Barkley's actually going to run faster than that. He has shown his chops as a a runner and a receiver. I think the criticism has been his pass blocking. And to my knowledge and to what I've seen this year, it seems like an area he's improved. And when you're talking about an elite talent at running back,
yeah, that's kind of
maybe
one of the
pass blocking can take a back seat to all these other great things that a guy does.
Well, and he's kind of getting to the point where he's similar to Le'Veon Bell,
yeah,
and David Johnson in terms of importance. When you look at the fact that they are guys that the offense that they play in is built around, so it's not just
right. You see, if these guys go down, things kind of go to hell on those teams, and, right. and it becomes very difficult, almost as if a quarterback goes down on another team.
Right. So, and here's the other thing. It's not that the running backs in Cleveland have been bad.
They've been bad. Well, I mean, Isaiah Crowell's been bad. Duke Johnson's been good, but he doesn't get touches.
Right. But it's that you're basically – and this is the double-edged sword of it. You're basically replacing two players with one, but God forbid anything happens to that one player, you have to replace them with two. So
yeah.
And we're seeing that in Arizona. We saw it in Pittsburgh. You know,
Arizona hasn't figured it out. Pittsburgh kind of figured it out with D'Angelo Williams last year, but that was a guy they caught lightning in a bottle with an old running back kind of on his last legs. Here's the thing with Cleveland, right? As they're constructed right now, it would kind of be insane for them to take a running back number one. I'd almost advocate for them to trade out of that spot again and let someone else do that. Let someone else take Saquon Barkley number one, or let somebody else take one of these quarterbacks like Sam Darnold number one. But can you imagine the storm that would arise out of something like that? So Cleveland almost is – it's almost like they're in a situation where they're going to have to make a move to try to acquire a veteran quarterback, whether it be – a blockbuster to acquire Kirk Cousins, or can they go back to the Jimmy Garoppolo well? And these are things that really excite me.
I'm super excited for you guys to give up pick 15 and pick some. You know,
well, remember Garoppolo's a free agent.
Garoppolo,
no, he's a free agent. They'd have to franchise him to get.
Haven't you heard? They're going to franchise him. That's what the big conversation is now.
You know.
The scuttlebutt, if you will.
Oh, geez. Oh, I'm not looking forward to round two of that. But the way Cleveland's constructed, they would have to do something at quarterback. And then I could see them pulling the trigger on Barkley because you're saying, like, well, almost like Garrett the year before, we're taking the guy who everybody agrees is the best player in college football, is the best draft eligible prospect. If that's the case, you can see it. Otherwise, it's just a very muddled picture to me. I think it's going to be a great, great debate and a fun debate and a contentious one as things go, because there's a lot of philosophy involved. And I've been on the other end where I've said, like, you can't take a running back that high. And now I'm looking at the field right now and I'm saying, never say never.
Well, and that's kind of the reality of the situation, is you're at a point where it's probably not the best year to have the first overall pick if you're not sold on this quarterback class.
On the flip side, it's a good year to have the first overall pick if you just can afford to take the guy who's clearly the best player in the draft. And now some other people have argued with me already offline that a pass rusher will emerge. Maybe a receiver will emerge. A receiver hasn't gone number one overall since Keyshawn Johnson, by the way. So that's been a long time too. Cornerbacks, they don't go number one overall either. It's been a very long time since that's happened. Safety as well. So you're kind of talking about, like we've mentioned, offensive tackle, defensive end, defensive tackle, or quarterback. And right now, I just don't see that kind of impact from any of those spots. And if you again, let's again assume Cleveland's going to be drafting number one. Are they going to go with another rookie in year three when everyone's job is online at quarterback? It's really hard for me to envision that. If they do another reboot, then all bets are off. But to me, I am feeling at this very early stage that some way, somehow, we're going to see some history and Barkley's going to end up going number one. If I had to put early money on it, and I'm not a gambler because I'm very bad at gambling, but if
Well,
I
and
did,
again, you're looking at it from the Cleveland
because
perspective.
they're the worst team in the NFL. So it's kind of easy for me to look at it through that lens.
So
But the
Albert,
San Francisco's right there, 0-7-2. So
yeah, so Albert Breer wrote an article, and I know everybody hates Breer or something like that.
feelings aside, this is actually kind of an interesting article. In fact, I would say a very interesting article.
And it kind of, dips its toe into the similar thing that we just hit on, and it talks about how the names at the top are the quarterbacks and Saquon Barkley, but is there anybody else? Like, who else can put their name into that grouping? And Bradley Chubb is brought up, as is Arden Key that we talked about. I mentioned briefly Quentin Nelson, but I mean, and you're not going to find anybody that likes guard play more than me, but there's no reasonable way he's going to go higher than Brandon Scherff went when he went five, right? Like
And Scherff was a tackle in college. So this is a guard going. I mean, this is kind of like Jonathan Cooper going seventh. Or I'm probably forgetting somebody else, but when Cooper went seventh overall in, I think, 2013, it had been decades since a guard went in the top 10. So do that math. I mean, Nelson going top 10 is very unlikely.
So let's start with the names that are kind of interesting. And the first one's Minkah Fitzpatrick out of Alabama, the versatile defensive back. He's kind of similar to Ramsey. Started
Right, he's
off
the
at
Jalen
corner,
Ramsey of this class, I guess.
started off at corner, now is playing a little more safety. If he measures up, is he going to end up playing corner a la Ramsey? And then what does that do to his stock?
He's playing corner, it's probably going to help his stock, quote unquote. But then we just saw Jamal Adams go sixth overall as a pure safety last year. So I'm not really sure when you look at the composition of an entire draft class, I'm not really sure that it matters too much. I'm of the school of thought that this guy has played corner. He's played corner well, and let's draft him and play him at corner. It's kind of how I felt about Ramsey. Like I felt like he could be this transcendent safety if you stuck him back there and let him roam, and he could come up and run and blitz out of the box and things like that. He could kind of do it all. But if you think he can play corner, play him at corner because that's the money position. From the player's perspective, and I know some safeties got some big contracts over the last couple of years, but from the player's perspective,
They'd rather.
Fitzpatrick and his agent, they're going to lobby to let him play corner to start out.
Then you have the next name, which is Derwin James. And this is really odd because
And he's a pure safety.
James came into the year, and we actually talked about it. Was he going to go higher than Jamal Adams? And this was kind of going against the Seth and Justin protocol of, hey, let's let this guy play for a year off of this knee injury before we start making claims. And it's kind of bit at least me in the butt because Derwin James hasn't been good. And our friends that kind of follow Florida State have said similarly, that he just hasn't been very good this year. So when you look at Derwin James, one, I don't even think he should come out. I think he need. While Florida State is a dumpster fire.
He's a redshirt sophomore.
Right.
Because of the injury.
And Florida State is a complete dumpster fire right now.
As Florida State goes, yeah.
But I really, like, if he's comfortable with whatever the coaching and everything that's going on at Florida State, if he's comfortable with that, he really needs to go back. Because this is a talented kid who, as a freshman, true freshman, looked like he could be one of the best players in America. And now you're like, huh, I don't know. Do we want to gamble on this? And so to see him even brought up in this article is really interesting.
There's a couple things about him. I know he hasn't been productive as far as the numbers have gone. I've seen a couple of Florida State games where he, you know, it seems like they're trying to play him in some of the same ways that they tried to play Ramsey. And obviously that's going to be such a tough comparison, such a tough thing to live up to. I saw him play with some of the competitive fire that I saw Ramsey play with, the way he finishes tackles and things like that. But the problem is he's not actually making some of those tackles, or he's taking poor angles on some of those tackles. And it kind of reminds me of Jabril Peppers' struggles as a defensive back the year before he came out, right? Because we know he played linebacker the year he did come out. So I'm seeing some of those kind of things. Now, you've got this physical specimen as far as a talent. He's like 6'2 and a half, 6'3, and over 210 pounds. And he's going to be able to run. He's going to test through the roof. So it's going to be hard, I think, to convince this kid to come back another year, especially because he missed a year with a knee injury, with a meniscus injury. And you don't want to have a repeat of that when you're not getting paid. So it's going to be very difficult for me to see that he's going to come back. I think what's going to happen with Derwin James is that he's going to come out of this year with some modest production, a little disappointing. He's going to test really well, and he's going to still be drafted highly by somebody who has faith that they can kind of catch lightning in a bottle, maybe get him back to that player that he was as a freshman. I think because you're coming off a year where you've had a knee injury, there's probably a confidence question. How much of the way he's playing is a result of him not having confidence in that knee yet? And maybe as we hit the home stretch here, he's going to play a little bit more loose and get down to business and be better. But yeah, it's been disappointing. And when we're talking about elite talent, and you have to start making all these concessions for a guy and say, well, he's going to be a great athlete, that's usually not a reason to plug somebody into that top five. But we've seen it before. It wouldn't be – to me, it's not really unusual if this guy's still being talked about as one of the top talents in this class. And I say talent because I don't want to say player, because he's not really – playing up to his potential right now. But maybe I saw last week against Louisville, very tough matchup for a guy like James against a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. But I thought that he made a couple plays that where he flashed. And I hate to use that. It sounds so scouting cliche, but I really did think he did make a couple flash plays, and maybe he's on his way back.
So when you go through it, and Breer's article was about, you know, who finishes off the top five. If you assume it's Darnold and Barkley, and then obviously things get really muddled if Darnold goes back, and then all of a sudden you have Barkley. So
I think Darnold will go back, by the way.
Right, and so now we hit on Chubb. There's always going to be a pass rusher that's going to go early. Chubb's probably the guy that's going to have the best chance based on right now. Fitzpatrick feels like a lock.
I think so. I think if you're talking about elite prospects, non-quarterback, you're talking about Barkley and Fitzpatrick, and then it sort of gets muddy from there.
And And so James feels like he's a guy that came into the year looking like it and just hasn't lived up to it, as has Arden Key. So both of those guys feel like if they do come out, they're going to be semi, you know, reclamation projects in terms of stock that we're going to be talking probably middle to late first round on guys that have flashed in terms of ability for a season and then have question marks and after, you know, the year that they get drafted.
And that might be enough to kick them into the top 10, Seth, because we saw like Barkevious Mingo have a 7.5 sack year as a redshirt sophomore and then come back as a redshirt junior and have like 4.5 sack year and still go 6th overall because it was that kind of class. So you could definitely see Arden Key having that similar type of end result. But the one that I found really interesting, because as you said, James, Key, Fitzpatrick, these were all guys that were hyped, super hyped coming into the season. Nelson was kind of an outlier to me as far as preseason hype, but like you said, probably the clear-cut best interior defense or offensive lineman. But Cortland Sutton, who's a guy that we've talked about extensively on the show and that I really, really have spoken highly of, but I was still surprised to see him in this conversation. What did you think about Sutton being in this conversation in Brewer's article?
This is where it gets odd for me, because when you have a guy like Sutton who has put up huge, huge numbers in multiple seasons, and that's something that we, you know, we look for in terms of production if we're going to want to get more information from a guy. You know, so as a freshman, he had 49 catches for 862 yards and 9 touchdowns. Last year, 76 catches, 1,246 yards, 10 touchdowns. This year, down in the receptions and yardage portion, 37 catches, 570 yards, but he still has 9 touchdowns. And he also has 1 rushing touchdown this year. So dude scores touchdowns. Now, you've talked about this quite a bit with him. 6'4", 215. He doesn't look exactly fast, but he's a glider. He's one of those guys that, you know, he's probably going to be a 4.5 guy. That's what my guess would be. And so do you take a guy from a small school that's in a 4.5 guy that plays in a, you know, a heavy passing offense? Do you take that guy in the top 5? Now, we saw Corey Davis, who had similar numbers over his career, but wasn't able to work out at the combine and now has been injury-plagued his first year as a pro, get drafted in the top 5. So if Corey Davis can go top 5, I don't feel like there's a reason Cortland Sutton couldn't go top 5. All that being said, I wouldn't take him top 5.
I think Sutton's actually coming from a worse situation as far as who he's catching passes from.
True.
But what you see, you mentioned his stats this year, right? So what you see is a high variance in terms of game outcome. Like, they played TCU and he had 1 catch for no yards against Ranthony Tejada, the cornerback from TCU, who it was reminiscent of the Kevin White West Virginia versus Kevin White TCU game, where you've got this wide receiver prospect that everybody thinks is elite against this small cornerback prospect from a team that's not really given credit. I mean, it's a Big 12 team, so they don't get the credit, even if they maybe deserve it, as a good defense. But there's Ranthony Tejada holding Cortland Sutton to 1 catch, 0 yards. How much of that was the quarterback? I actually haven't had too much of a chance to review the tape of that game, but then only 2 catches for 32 yards the next week against Arkansas State. But he's been kind of on a tear since then. 112 yards and 2 touchdowns the week after, 11 for 160 against Houston, and then against Cincinnati last week, he had another two touchdown game. So I like Sutton. I think you hit the nail on the head. He's a glider. I think he will go in the four fives. I don't think he'll be in the low four fives. I think he's going to be, maybe
Maybe
between
like
like a
four,
four
five,
five
five.
five to four
Yeah.
six three or whatever. Yeah, I'm playing Greg Gabriel now because he gives these ranges like that where it's like impossible to see hundreds of a second, right? So, but we know Sutton's an athletic guy. He's a basketball player. There's videos of him on the internet doing extremely athletic things, and we see the body control in his game, the way he adjusts to really poorly thrown passes, especially along the sideline. I've raved about him running slants and crossing routes and the way he picks up yards after the catch. The criticism I've heard from other scouts is that he doesn't run a lot of routes. So I don't know. When you're a big guy like that, I don't know how many routes you really need to run. But if you can run slants, crossers, and then catch back shoulder throws, I think that's pretty solid repertoire to have as a rookie going into the NFL if you're that big and you have that kind of athleticism. So I still like Courtland Sutton a lot, and I think he will ultimately be a top, let's say, 40 pick. I think he'll be a top 40 pick. But I wouldn't have thought that he would be a top five pick. And again, kind of similar to what I was saying when we were talking about Chubb, if he was going to go in the top 15 of a draft, and last year his competition was Corey Davis, and then and John Ross, a guy who had paper thin cartilage in his knees and had 1 year of production, if that was going to be his competition, he was going to go that high. Why didn't he declare last year? We found out when we talked to Justin Mello over the off season that it was because he wanted to get his degree, but I have a feeling there was still some influence on the feedback from the feedback that he got from the advisory board. So I wouldn't count Sutton as a surefire top five pick. And one guy I wanted to hit on that Breer didn't mention, because he mentioned Fitzpatrick, James, Key, Nelson, Sutton, all the guys we talked about. He didn't mention Lamar Jackson. And what happens if somebody does fall in love with Lamar Jackson the way Atlanta fell in love with Mike Vick in 2001, where they did trade a bounty for him with the San Diego Chargers and moved into that number one overall spot? And I remember the discussions about Vick, and he had much less of a record as far as passing statistically than what Lamar Jackson's put up. And our friend Ian Wharton at NFL Film Study, you should check out his timeline because he's done some interesting things with historical accuracy, pass charting. And he did a comparison with Mike Vick and with Lamar Jackson. I think if you listen to this show, I think you'll like to check that out. So go check out Ian's timeline at NFL Film Study. And, Ian is one of our frequent guests. He's a very diligent worker when it comes to this stuff, and I think he's really hitting on some interesting points. So I'm not counting out Lamar Jackson to be a very, I would say at this point, I guess a surprise top five pick. But I think when all this shakes out, it probably won't be a surprise. This is a guy who won a Heisman Trophy and who's doing unprecedented things and really carrying a Louisville team on his back.
A bad Louisville team. And that's, this is a discussion for another day, but that's what's so interesting about how we as in the media formulate these guys. When you talk about what Jackson's doing on a bad Louisville team and he's still making plays, but we give a pass to Josh Allen and Sam Darnold because they don't have talent. And it's like, well, why is one doing so much better than the others? But the other,
How does
so.
Sam Darnold get that pass? I mean, he plays for USC. They've got Ronald Jones. They've got Deonte Burnett. I mean, it's ridiculous that Sam Darnold would get that pass and that Lamar Jackson wouldn't. Josh Allen, I get it. You want to give him the pass, but then why isn't he playing better against Mountain West competition? And that's a conversation that we've had before and we will have again because Josh Allen continues to get talked about in the top 10. In fact, Mel Kiper Jr. this is the hot take of the week. We're not going to really do hot takes, but this was the hot take of the week. Mel Kiper Jr. today, the Godfather, said basically this season doesn't matter for Josh Allen because of his bad supporting cast. So get angry about that. Save your anger for another show, because we will talk about that later on in the season as things go on. But Seth, let's get into the weekend slate, because we got to get out of here really soon. We're going on over an hour here. So let's run through the top games and possibly the game of the year so far this year. And I'm not saying this. You know, I know this is part of the drinking game. If you listen to the Draft Breakdown podcast for a long time, and I talk about Ohio State, but this is the game of the year so far, as far as I'm concerned. Penn State's at Ohio State. It's an afternoon game. These two teams usually play each other at night. It's an afternoon game this time. It's at 3:30 Eastern time on Saturday. Penn State traveling to Ohio State. JT Barrett's been on fire. Saquon Barkley was a player who had an extremely good game against Ohio State as a true freshman. This is going to be a great test for both teams, and I think whoever comes out of this game is clearly in position for a playoff berth. Would you not say?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they have to beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game.
Assuming Wisconsin comes out of that side, but yeah, they're on track.
You know, so, but it looks good from the perspective of right now. It looks like it's going to happen.
I mean, Wisconsin has a left-handed quarterback. Come on.
Right, exactly. And that's a fair criticism, usually accurate as well. So the last good left-handed quarterback was Michael Vick, and we talked about him earlier. So I'm just kidding. Matt Leinart was good in college.
In college? So was Tim Tebow. Oklahoma State at West Virginia. This is a matchup of quarterbacks. Mason Rudolph, who is losing some luster among the draft Knicks, and Will Greer, the redshirt junior transfer from Florida, who is picking up steam among draft Knicks, notably Kyle Krabs of NDT Scouting / FanRag Sports, who wrote a glowing article about Will Greer. My guy to watch in this game is West Virginia receiver David Sills V. He was a quarterback who was recruited by Lane Kiffin as a 13-year-old. And obviously a lot of things happened between then and when David Sills graduated college, but he ends up going to – or graduated high school, and he ends up going to West Virginia. They move him to receiver after he loses a quarterback competition. He plays well as a freshman. He transfers to junior college to give quarterback one last shot, doesn't play that great, transfers back to West Virginia, and now, as a junior, is leading the nation in touchdown receptions. This is a 6'4 guy, an athlete, a quarterback convert, very interested in David Sills. In fact, I find him more interesting than the quarterbacks in this game.
North Carolina State at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is back, maybe.
They're rolling.
Here's the thing about Notre Dame, and I'm not a Notre Dame fan by
any means. Your wife is, though.
Yes, my wife is. The boss of my life is.
But so Seth catches every Notre Dame game, in other words.
I do. And I got to see the crap show that was Sam D'Arnold last week. No, I'm not going to learn how to pronounce his name either.
that's another drink if you're paying attention.
But the Notre Dame offense is so much fun because of how they run the football. And so this is going to be a great test for North Carolina State and a guy we just talked about, Bradley Chubb. He may not have a chance to improve on his sack totals, but we have talked about before the importance of tackles for loss and making plays behind the line of scrimmage in college, because that does typically proceed to turn into sacks in the NFL. So
and Chubb's a big TFL guy. And again, the conversation we said earlier about Emmanuel Ogba, if he turns into a TFL guy on the pro level, that still translates to good run defense. And I want to add too, you've got two really exciting running backs in this game. Josh Adams from Notre Dame just had a huge game. even getting a little bit of like top five Heisman talk, and then you've got Nyheim Hines from NC State, who's having a really good year. He's a guy who has gone back and forth between receiver and running back. Now has settled in as their top running back. He's having an exciting year. He's a good kick return guy too. And then you've got Ryan Finley, a sleeper quarterback who actually showed up at number 7 overall in Chris Trapasso's mock draft at CBSSports.com. That's crazy to me.
Heading home to Arizona,
That's
baby.
hot, but that's crazy, man. Like Finley's a game manager type and a guy who should be on your radar, but not a first round guy. And also, he's like a fifth year junior, the rare fifth year junior.
Coming home to Arizona, baby. Coming back to Arizona. But yeah, so that'll be an interesting one. Also, obviously McGlinchey and Nelson against that NC State
Right, they've got Chubb
front.
and Kentavious Street, a freak athlete on the interior defensive line. He kind of kicks out, he kicks in and out on that left side of that defensive line. So watch for that. That's a good matchup across their whole defensive line, offensive line. That's a good matchup.
And then we have UCLA at Washington.
I put this on here for Josh Rosen, right?
And obviously the mighty Arizona State Sun Devils ended the national title aspirations of the Washington Huskies with their embarrassing loss to a apparently good defensive football team now. But UCLA has struggled this year. So, this is
There's a
a
lot of people who would argue that Rosen is carrying that team and that he deserves the supporting cast credit that a guy like Josh Allen's getting. I think for my money, Rosen is a really exciting player and he really looks the part, but he's come up really short in some areas like situational passing, third downs, red zone, where I think he's tried to force the issue. That could be a product of him trying to do too much. Again, the knock on Rosen is these mysterious attitude things that we are not privy to details on. I saw a rumor this week on Twitter that I do not want to repeat because it was so outlandish, and I just don't trust the source of the rumor, but it had to do with possible criminal activity. And it's just like it's silly season has started early, I think, with this. But we can say without question that Rosen's already getting the Connor Cook, DeShone Kizer type of personality over analysis.
So that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week, kind of go over what happened in Penn State, Ohio
We'll
State.
probably be back next week. You never know.
Justin may retire if Ohio State loses again.
I'm more likely to retire because of the Browns, but yeah, I still enjoy the draft stuff, to be honest.
But yeah, so we'll be back next week. We'll have some fun with it. We're going to talk a little bit about dying on the hill and what's going on with that lately. So it should be fun. But thanks as always for listening. Check us out on SoundCloud. Check us out on iTunes. We're on Blog Talk Radio. So give us a follow on anywhere. Give us a 5-star review. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll be back next week.